If somebody were to walk into the room today and had on a uniform could be of any different types. It could be a Navy uniform. It could be an Army uniform. It could be somebody in the Marines. Depending upon what they were wearing and how they conducted themselves, we'd be able to say, well, that's a Marine, or that's a, you know, that's an airline pilot. Or if somebody walked in here with a stethoscope on and a white frock, we'd probably say, well, that's a doctor. In other words, you could pick them out by what they were wearing or how they looked. All right. My question for you today is this. What does holiness look like? What does holiness look like? And as I was thinking about this, and I thought, if Jesus were to walk in here, yeah, if Jesus Christ of Nazareth walked in here today, in our 20th century environment, I don't know that we would know he was holy by looking at him, do you think? Do you think we could look at him and see that? He's not going to have a halo, I know that. And he may be surrounded by a heavenly host of angels, but we're not going to see them either unless he so desires us to see them. So here he comes, and is he holy or not?
Yeah.
Well, he'd be what I would call holy because he is perfect. He would be perfect. And there is a synonymous meaning between the word holiness and perfect. One is Old Testament, one is New Testament. We'll take a look at that briefly here in just a moment. My question today for you is, what does holiness look like? How do we pin that down? Oh, by the way, how do we pin down perfection? Matthew 5 says that we're to become to be therefore perfect, correct? Have you seen anybody perfect? How would you know somebody's perfect? It's impossible. In other words, it's very difficult to pin down these descriptions, these qualities that we hear a lot about, like we do want to be holy and we do want to be perfect, but sometimes how we get there or what we identify with that is not sure and not clear. Today I would like to take you into a brief journey through the code of holiness, which was so described by an author back in the 1800s, of Leviticus chapter 17 through 26. That's called the Holiness Code. Now, we're not going to read through every single verse of that. In fact, I'll only spend a little bit of time in those verses with you, primarily chapter 19 when we get into it. For your understanding, I would like to give you a very brief overview of Leviticus, that book which oftentimes is overlooked. It is the third book of the five books of the law. So there's two before it and there's two after it. It's right in the middle, and there may be some reason for that. It is named Leviticus because of the way in which it begins. If you want to turn to Leviticus chapter 1 for just a moment, Leviticus chapter 1, and the Lord called. If you look in the Hebrew for "and the Lord called," that particular Hebrew word is where we get the name Leviticus. And so it is with the other books of the law, that as they begin, the first word in the Hebrew text is the name by which we know them today. So, "and the Lord called unto Moses," the Lord called. So we look at this book as Leviticus. This book of Leviticus follows on the book of Genesis, Exodus, so Exodus precedes it. The book of Exodus offers a great deal of detail about the tabernacle and about the responsibilities of the priesthood. Two broad categories, very broad categories, exist inside the book of Leviticus. One is addressed to the children of Israel. The other is addressed to the priesthood. Occasionally I'm asked, is there more required of a minister than of a lay member? Yes. I've talked to ministers about that in years gone by, and ministers who thought that they had the permission to be just as worldly as everybody else. By the way, I'm not saying you all are worldly. Don't misunderstand me on that. But the idea was is that they could just blend into society, and they didn't have to be different than or apart from or more righteous, may I put that in quotes, than others. But you know, 1 Timothy chapter 3 does talk about the qualifications of the ministry, doesn't it? And when I read through those things, to be in the ministry, there are certain things that are expected of you that are not necessarily expected of someone who is not going to enter into the ministry. So in the book of Leviticus, which is preceded by Exodus, these books about all these unbelievable laws, wonderful laws, really, we find then laws for the community of Israel, and I might even say the civil nation, the national nation of Israel, which is under Leviticus text, a theocracy. We today in this society, we are not under a theocracy. And I'm going to put something on the board. I'm going to do a Wes White. I'm going to get on the board here in just a minute, which is a good thing to try to help you out. Anybody else could do that too, but we appreciate Wes showing us that we can do it here at church. I am often confused just a little bit, although I get it generally speaking, over some of the language that is used in the book of Leviticus. So I'm going to give you some three terms in a moment I want you to consider. But first of all, let me give you the broad descriptions of the book of Leviticus, okay? Leviticus 1 through 7 talks about the offerings, how you get them, how they are to be offered before the brazen altar, which is talked about in the book of Exodus. Chapters 8 through 10 talks about the consecration rites of the first priests and how to start worship in the tabernacle. Now, let's just stop there for a moment. We today do not have a tabernacle. We do not have an official place of worship that's a building. Does God tabernacle with you? Yes, he does. So you then represent a means by which worship is seen, that God dwells in you. Therefore, you reflect him tabernacling in you. There's a huge responsibility with that. Chapters 11 through 15, they talk about the laws of cleanliness, all sorts of things, you know, if you know, you fluids from the body, leprosy, the plague, all sorts of things are mentioned there, the laws of cleanliness. Chapter 16, we know that because that talks about the Day of Atonement, that great day when the national sin offering was made for the children of Israel. Then 17 through 26, this is known as the Holiness Code, as I've already mentioned to you. And it's called that because it emphasizes God's standards for his people. And I'd like to really spend a little more time in the Holiness Code with you. And let's see if we can find out what it looks like. And if we can find out what it looks like, we can see where it is and where it is not. Now, as I mentioned to you, the nation of Israel was unique in that it was a theocracy. And by that I mean, this is general category, I would like to take a moment, and maybe this will help you, it helps me a little bit if I do this. Up in the corner. You hear things like statutes, judgments, laws. What are they, and what's the difference in them? And I thought I'd give you a little bit of an illustration on that to see if we can figure this out. All right, first of all, you may do it any number of ways, but I'm going to do it this way with you, that the Levitical laws can be divided into three broad categories. One is moral. The next is civil. And the third is ceremonial. Okay. Now remember, we've already established that the nation of Israel was a what? A theocracy. So a nation that is a theocracy, who is its ruler?
God
is. And as the ruler, who makes the laws?
God.
He does. And as the ruler, if the laws are broken, who says this is what you will do if you break my laws? God does. And that's what we find in the book of Leviticus. And it's broken down into the moral laws, civil laws, and the ceremonial laws. Alright? Now, what do you think, generally speaking, is presented in the moral laws? The Ten Commandments. Okay, we'll call these the Ten Commandments. Alright. Now, let me ask you about the Ten Commandments. The moral laws, do they ever end? Do they ever stop? Can they be abrogated? Can these be done away with? No, because these principles right here are eternal. They are everlasting. Nothing changes them. No government can change them. No community can change them. It is always right to keep the Sabbath day. It makes no difference where you live, what age you live in, how old you are, how young you are. These laws are eternal. They last forever. Next, we have the civil laws then, and by civil, what do I mean? Okay, civil laws would be things that are reflected in Scripture as, and this is the way I put it together, statutes and judgments. Statutes and judgments. For example, I'll have a little bit of fun with you on this. I'm going to come back to this and give an illustration. Let's come to the third, which is ceremonial, and this is reflected in what are known as ordinances. And I will explain to you what that is in just a moment. So we have the three great broad categories, moral, civil, ceremonial. It's broken down to the Ten Commandments. By the way, do these ever change?
Yes.
They change because
society
changes. And it is if it's no longer a theocracy, the statutes and judgments then will change based upon the government in which you live. Therefore, those of us in America, we have a moral faith and conviction, but the civil laws that we keep will vary, even in our communities, from state to state. Okay? But for us as Christians, if there is a statute or a judgment given to us that contradicts this, what are we supposed to do?
This.
This, exactly. Okay, now the ceremonial law, what do you think that is attached to? The ordinances. And this is normally attached to anything that has to do with you've broken the law, this is what you have to do to get right with the law. Let me give you an illustration of that. What is the sixth commandment?
No.
Okay, no murder. I just put on here, no murder. All right. Is that a moral law that's eternal, everlasting, as long as they're human beings? Okay. That's the no murder. How does this play out in statutes and judgments? And you could read this, for example, regarding somebody who commits then accidental manslaughter. Is manslaughter murder? Well, it's taking of a life. Okay, it fits within the sixth commandment, correct? Fits underneath that. If somebody accidentally murders somebody, then it calls for a judgment or a statute that goes like this. A person, I don't know if I'm going to write all this out or not, a person guilty of accidental manslaughter, I'll just abbreviate, manslaughter, what is the judgment given by the law? Manslaughter. He may go to a city of refuge. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's called a civil statute or judgment. A judgment that has to be rendered based upon a violation of the moral law. So I'll just put over here, city of refuge, and you get the point. Okay. How does this play out with the ceremonial ordinances in the book of Leviticus and also mentioned in other places? It goes like this. If you do this, you must offer this sacrifice. You must take a bullock. You must take a dove. You must give up something of personal value to you. In other words, this is where the sacrificial laws come into play. Sacrificial laws. Okay? So, a person commits murder, violated the eternal law. By the way, this we know also changes. How about this? That with the priesthood, what changes? The administrations of the priesthood. Okay, in other words, what was involved in the Old Testament ceremonial laws are no longer valid because we don't have the temple, the place of worship today. Let me ask you this, though. Can we take a look at all three of these as they're presented in the book of Leviticus and other places and learn the principles that guide them? Therefore, the principles that are behind all of this help us make judgments today. Never changing this. We can never change this. But our judgments might vary, okay, based upon circumstances. And just to have a little fun with you, I'm going to give you a commandment, a CG commandment. The law is you cannot be out after midnight. That's the moral law. I'm not changing that, okay? My grandkids, it's not changing, okay? So that's an eternal law. Okay, let's make it a, let's look at the judgment, because all of a sudden, what would cause me to have to make a judgment on this law that I set up? What would happen? Okay, so the first time my daughter does it, it requires a judgment, does it not? Okay, but what will affect the judgment? Or are you going to have to face this one? Circumstances will affect it, because let's say that, just talking to you a little bit about it to get you to see how God responds to judgment issues. Let's say that my daughter is driving my car that I gave her to drive, and that it breaks down at 11:45, and she's in Gilmer. Okay, it'd be my fault. Okay, so we got to lessen the judgment for sure. But the point is that if there's cause and reason, even though this is a law, which if you break the law, the penalty is what?
Death.
Okay. Where's my daughters? Hope you're listening to this. But see, that would affect it. Now, what about this? Just what if she gave the keys to somebody else and she wasn't driving the vehicle, and she happened to fall asleep in the back seat, and the person, rather than coming home at 12 o'clock, took them somewhere else? Does that change my judgment? That would affect a little bit, wouldn't it? Okay. All right, but now let's talk about the ordinances, because here is the law, here's the judgment. What's the payment? What would be the payment? Now, if she had a really good reason, I might say, okay, but I want you to understand what the law is, sweetheart, so you have to forfeit driving for 1 week. Okay, that would be an ordinance. I just made an ordinance. If you come home after midnight and the car broke down, you just have to give up driving for 1 week. Okay? But if, on the other hand, you're out past midnight, and the reason is because you just lost track of time, which is called negligence, then what might the ordinance be? You're going to have to wash my car for a month. Do you begin to see how, okay, we have the moral laws, the civil, the statute, the judgments that reflect, they have to come out of this law, and then what are known as the ordinances. I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. All these laws that we find talked about here can be put into two broad categories, which I think you will find agreeable and acceptable. They are, number one, laws that define our relationship with God, and laws that define our relationship with fellow human beings. These are the two great laws. You know, we read about them, we talk about them, we study them. But I want you to recognize that those two great laws are eternal. And inside them, there are temporary manifestations that are reflected in worship. The first four commandments, for example, give eternal principles about how to worship God. How to worship God. In those laws, what do we find emphasized? We have there emphasized God's holiness, his hatred of sin, and his plan of ultimate redemption. They are manifested in the temporary laws of worship that we read about in the book of Leviticus. Now, what about the last six? They too are reflective of eternal principles, but they find their manifestation in the civil laws, how we treat each other, not only in church and where we work, but in our communities. In ancient Israel, for example, just a text here I wanted to show you, there was a civil rule. There are many others. I just wanted to mention this particular one. It says, remember in ancient Israel, they would build their houses with flat roofs. Are you aware of that? Well, there was a law in Israel, and you can read it in Deuteronomy chapter 22. Was it a moral law? Here's the law. It says, if you have a flat home, roofed home, what are you supposed to do?
Build a parapet.
You're supposed to build a parapet or a fence around it. Is that a moral law? That would be a civil law based upon preventing what from happening? Taking someone's life. Okay. Okay, what about this? If you dig a hole in your yard, okay, is there a moral law against digging a hole in your yard? There is no moral law against it, but there is a law that says about injury and hurting people. That's the great moral law. So if you build a hole in your yard, what are you supposed to do?
Put a fence around it.
Put a fence around it, or keep people from getting into it. How about this? How about this? What if What if you give somebody a car, your car, and you know the brakes aren't good? What about that? Guess what you've just done? Guess what laws you just tampered with? A judgment will have to be made, because if you get somebody in your car and have the brakes aren't good, what's likely going to happen? It's going to violate this law. Well, you knew about it too, see? So if you did that, then there has to be an ordinance that offers some kind of justification or justice for your infraction. See how all this sort of works together? And yet it's beautiful when it's a theocracy, when it's God making the judgments and looking out for the innocent, the widow, the fatherless, and those that do not have very much. So what does holiness look like? I want us to take a look now at a couple things. I want to come to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Let's begin there before we get into Leviticus. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1. For those of you who like to study these types of things, I'd like to give you some of the Hebrew words. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1. It says, now these are the, notice, commandments. All right? The statutes and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you go to possess it. There's an interesting delineation as we work our way through this. The word commandment that is used here is in the Hebrew mitvah. And yes, that does involve itself in what God says, what God speaks. Did he speak the Ten Commandments? Okay. All right. Then we come to statutes. And this is an interesting word. Here in this text, it is C-H-O-Q. I'm not sure I know how to pronounce that. Now, C-H-O-Q is applied to the statutes and judgments, which you find a lot about in the book of Leviticus, because it talks about the blood of an animal. Are you supposed to eat the blood of an animal? No, you're not. Are you supposed to just at whim kill a creature because it's there to kill? No, you're not. It also talks about things like fruit trees. Fruit trees are part of nature, are they not? So you end up with C-H-O-Q, these elements that deal with nature and animals, and how you interact with the innocent and the vulnerable in your community. When they're the innocent, the handicapped, the blind, the maimed in your community, C-H-O-Q, there must be statutes that do what for them? Protect them. It also provides a sense of justice for them. All right, now the next word here I want you to see is over in Genesis 26:5. So let's turn over there. Genesis 26:5, and you're familiar with this text, but I wanted to give you the Hebrew words for it. And we'll try to put a little bit of this together. Genesis 26:5, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my utterances, what I asked him to do, gave him to do, my commandments, notice here the word statutes. The word statutes is mentioned. Here it is a little bit different than where it was in the previous text. And so you'll have it for accuracy's sake. In Genesis 26:5, remember C-H-O-Q, but in Genesis 26:5, the Hebrew word is C-H-U-Q. Q-A-H. Statutes that deal, we said this dealt with nature, the innocent, and so forth, but now this deals with C-H-U-Q-Q-A-H. That pertains to rituals and festivals. When you read through Leviticus chapter 23, for example, is there a chapter there? So in Leviticus chapter 23, Leviticus chapter 23, do we have a chapter that deals with the festivals? And what's attached to the festivals then? A group of statutes and judgments, C-H-U-Q-A-A-H. Okay? So when we look at the commandments and the statutes any ordinances. We recognize then God's complete way of working with a theocracy. He gives us his commandments. There are going to be aberrations to those commandments, and this is the punishment or the way in which restoration is made. Because punishment is really about what? You won't be in the kingdom of God? No, God wants you to be restored. You can offer a bullock or a lamb, whatever it might be, and you can be brought back to or within the grace of God. So this is all about redemption. It's all about being holy. It's being as God is, and God is holy. I ask the question again, what does holiness look like? How does it manifest itself? Now let's come back to the book of Leviticus now for just a moment or two. Leviticus. And I want you to come over to, if you take notes of such things, because I have them marked up inside the holiness code. And just follow along with me now, because what does it mean to be holy? Let's define that for just a moment. I would say, are you holy or not? What does it mean to be holy? Let's come back here to Leviticus and notice I'm going to begin reading here in chapter 18. And I want you to notice here in verse 3. We could go ahead and begin reading verse 1. The Lord spoke unto Moses. He said, speak to the children of Israel. So this set of laws are addressed to whom? Not just to the priesthood, but to the community, the nation of Israel. And here's what he says. I am the Lord your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein you dwelt, don't do it. Stop it. It's over. No more. No ifs, ands, or buts. Can't do it. Get rid of all the gods. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Why? Because God is the only true God that's everlasting. Don't you make any graven images of me or any likeness that is in heaven above or the earth below. Why? Because if you make a god out of stone, it can be pulverized and destroyed. If you make a god, an idol out of wood that's me, it can be burned up. It doesn't last. If you make a building on a hillside to my name, an earthquake destroys it. A flood washes it away. Don't make any images of me, because I cannot be destroyed. You can draw me. Don't draw me, because that will fade away. It can be burned up. No, understand me, because knowing me allows me to exist forever. And the book of Leviticus is about knowing God and what we can do to be holy. Now, he said here, you came out of Egypt, don't you go back to it. And then he also says this, and after doings of the land of Canaan, where I bring you, you shall not do it. Okay, so what does that mean? Let me tell you what that means. Let's just say we lock, stock, and barrel. We decide to go to India. All right, we're all going to go to India. We're going to go from this nation to that nation. We're going to all get together. We're going to march together. Can't you just see that? That'd be something. All right, we're going to march over there to India. So what are we going to do? Are we going to start giving special privileges to the sacred cow or not? No. No. He says, I'm going to deliver you into the Canaanites, into the land of the Canaan that I promised to you, but they do unspeakable abominations in that land. I know about it. And the language that he uses, he says, I am going to vomit them out of their country. And you know what he did? They were got rid of. They were expunged. They were cast out. They were overthrown. They were no longer part of the land. They had been removed. And Israel came marching in. And he said to them, listen, you came out of Egypt. Don't you go back to that way of life. And I'm going to take you into the land of promise. And don't you keep their worship either. Keep mine. Be holy. I am holy. We'll see the text here in a moment. You be holy. Okay. So I begin to see a pattern early on as I look at this code of holiness that God says, I don't want you to be this way. I want you to be this way. If you are this way, you are not like the god of Molech, which, by the way, was a common practice where they were going, the lands that they were meandering about. You know what they did to the god of Molech. They sacrificed their kiddos. They burned up their children, for crying out loud. Can you imagine the God of all that is and ever will be, the eternal principles of loving one another, looking down at a group of religious people and probably some ministers up there parading around with who knows what kind of gear and paraphernalia on and all sorts of headdresses, whatever it might be, and they're offering up incense, and they grab a little child and they bring a child up there and they put it in the fire? I was thinking about this in our society today. Can you imagine what God thought about Woodstock? I mean, just think about that for a moment. I miss Woodstock, okay? I wasn't there, but I've seen some specials about it. But I've seen some specials, and I thought, you know, we make movies about Woodstock. You know, this phenomena that took place over somewhere back east, and everybody was getting drunk. They had all sorts of little peace worship stuff going, all sorts of things, and they were all decorated up, and they were basically insane, and it was reminiscent of what took place right at the base of where the Ten Commandments were given. And they were free love, free sex, free drugs. And God's up there watching all that kind of thing. So that's what we're supposed to do. That makes us holy. Is that what makes us holy? Just doing what we want to do, having free reign on whatever we desire, all the hedonism we would ever want to have, pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. Yeah. I was talking to Betsy last night because of some situations that we're aware of, and I was just trying to get my mind around, why is it that people like to try and take their lives by taking medicine or taking booze or getting a combination, some toxic mix of drugs and alcohol? Why do we do that? Why do people do that and then sort of leave the door open for somebody to come and rescue them? Don't they know how they're going to feel the next day? You know, how are you going to feel the next day? And I would certainly hope they would not take their lives. I mean, let me tell you something. That's not being holy. I mean, you understand that, surely. Okay, because if you're going to take your own life that way, what law does that violate? That violates right here, doesn't it? Okay. Does God understand? Well, sure he does. But remember, those laws are eternal and everlasting. Let's read on just a little bit farther now in chapter 18, verse 4. You shall do my judgments and you shall keep mine ordinances. Judgments and ordinances. Here we go. See right here? Judgments and ordinances. So when a judgment is made against you for a violation of the moral law, you must get right with me. In my theocracy, this is how you do it. And God drew great attention to the sacrifice of an animal and its blood, which was offered on the altar, because what did that ultimately point to, brothers and sisters? What did that ultimately point to? Who would shed his blood for all our sins. So the laws that were at work here in the book of Leviticus carry over to the testimony and life of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. I want you to see a couple things here as we run through chapter 18. You might notice in verse 6, for example, none of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. This is against incest. And we have all these regulations. Just read through them. It's just staggering how God offered these rules and regulations and his teachings about sexual purity. Why? Because the land where they had been were violating all these, and the land where they were going was violating them too. And he says, no, I don't want you doing those things. Stop it. Because notice what he says here in the verse 24 of chapter 18. Defile not you yourselves in any of these things. Verse 20. Where has our society gone? I'm backing up. Do you know, in our society today, I don't know if it's possible to watch a sitcom or a movie where it isn't cute or okay or appropriate or right for somebody to sleep with somebody else before they get married. And we don't even wink, we don't even bat an eye at that anymore. That's sort of accepted thing. So guess what's going on in our society? See, when I was growing up, about the worst thing that was going on in my school is they were wearing black jackets and they were riding motorcycles. Okay. Now, was other stuff going on? Sure, other stuff was going on, but not like today, because today there's nothing wrong with it. According to what? Not the theocracy, but what has changed? Society. Our society has changed. Oh, society has said it's okay to sleep with somebody to commit incest even. Yeah. But what does God say? This eternal principle trumps this because that is a moral law. All right. So it's not okay to do those things. And we shouldn't even entertain. Don't go back to the way it was, and don't go into the... Don't do it like they do it in Europe, ladies and gentlemen. Just because they're doing it in Europe doesn't make it okay here. Just because they do it in Las Vegas doesn't mean we do it here. Boy, do you think the world would change? Answer that question. Do you think our society would change for the better if all the adults would stop sleeping around on each other? Don't you think it would? Just think of, there'd be so fewer unwanted children. People would stop killing each other. Now, how many people are murdered and violated because of adultery? Okay, all sorts of things, scandalous things happen. I just pull that one thing out because all these particular ones leading up to verse 20, you know, incest, your mother, for crying out loud, your stepmother, what? All these things are talked about right here. And he says, don't do that. Don't defile yourself, for in all these the nations are defiled, which I cast you out before you. Now notice verse 26. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments and shall not commit any of these what? That's right. You know what it's called? You know what homosexuality is called? It's an abomination, ladies and gentlemen. It's not cute, sweet, okay. Oh, it's covered by love. It's an abomination. Incest is an abomination. Adultery is an abomination. Yes. Let's call it like it is. Those laws are eternal. They're never going to change. But society tries to pull out the pillars of support for that and say, oh, it's okay. It's all right if you have sex if you don't have children. Oh, really? Where's that in the text? Where's that in the text? If you're going to believe this, where's that in the text? I want you to see now in verse 30, chapter 18. Therefore shall you keep mine ordinance that you commit not any one of these abominable... What were they called? Everybody see that? They're called abominable customs, which were committed before you, that you do not defy yourselves. Okay, if you defy yourselves, you know what you're doing? You're not being holy. Let's think about that great tabernacle that was constructed and the Holy of Holies, for example, talked about in the book of Exodus, where the priests were supposed to administer. Actually, once a year, the priest would go into the holiest of holies. What did he have to do before he would go in there? He had to cleanse himself. What was that? He had to commit a ceremonial ordinance, abide by that, offer sacrifice for himself, so that when he went into the presence of God, what was he? He was clean. You know, we talk about the laws of clean and unclean. Well, if we had a temple today, and we went into the Holy of Holies, guess what the priest would have to do? But we know, of course, who did go into the Holy of Holies once for all of us, you know, our high priest. Did you see the principle we learned from that? Don't be defiled by these things. Now, chapter 19, just a few verses here. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel. And this is what he said. You shall be holy. Why? For I am the Lord your God, am holy. So if you want to see what God, what holiness looks like, where do you find it? You find it in God, how God is, how he presented himself to us. Just a little things, all the little items that are covered here. Notice these things. Let's see how well we're doing in our society today. It says, you shall fear every man his mother and his father, and you shall keep my... Okay, you shall fear every man his mother and his father. So have you been in the halls of Walmart recently with the little children controlling their parents, screaming at the top of their lungs if they don't get a little M&M? You tell me that the children today are fearing their mothers and their fathers? I mean, Betsy talks to me about the school, the little children that go to her class, and they come in there, and she has one little boy, yes, one little boy that's been added to her class recently, and he's disrupted the entire class so often and so frequently that the class's grades are dropping. Not just his are already zero, but the entire class, because when class is going on, he's yelling and screaming and pushing and resisting and fighting. And you know what? Betsy can't do a thing. And so who suffers? The whole class suffers. Because these judgments are perverted. Once judgment gets perverted, guess what happens? Everybody suffers. And I'm just telling you, today in our society, in our community, which is not a theocracy, society is suffering. But you and I are still called to be holy. For I, the Lord your God, am holy. Let's read a few more little things here. Let's come down here to verse 9. I love this principle. And when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field. Neither shalt you gather the gleanings of your harvest, and you shall not glean your vineyard. Neither shall you take every grape of the vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. So what do we learn from that? I don't have a vineyard today. I don't have a garden. Okay? But what can I do? I can bring canned goods to distribute to the poor. Can I not? If I saw somebody in need, what's the principle here? Because I got plenty. I can put together a bag of groceries and go give it to them and not say even where it came from. Can't you do that? Isn't that a principle we glean from that? In the theocracy, this is what we would do. Let's read on a little bit farther. Don't you steal. By the way, does this have an echo now of the last six commandments? Are we into the last six here at all, do you think, about how we're supposed to relate to each other in our community? I don't want you to steal, he says. Don't you deal falsely with each other. Don't you lie to one another. You know, do we deal falsely with each other? In our society, it happens all the time. He says, don't do that. For example, don't sell them a pound of flour if it's only got a half a pound. Don't you rig those scales. Say, cut that stuff out. Be fair. Be equitable. Be just. He says, you shall not defraud your neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with you all night until the morning. You know what that's all about? Because in ancient Israel, they had to have the money that night to buy the food to feed their families that night. They couldn't wait until the next day. But, you know, you could bargain with them. You'd say, well, I'm not going to give it to you tonight. I'll give you your wages tomorrow morning. What was the parable in the New Testament by Jesus about the laborers in the vineyard? They got paid when? After they worked. Okay. So you can even defraud things, people this way. Do you ever get manipulated out of salary needs in your job? That happens all the time. We get defrauded, don't we? We get cheated. Well, he said, don't you do that. Don't you curse the deaf. How about verse 14? Nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God. I am the Lord. You know, this is almost beyond comprehension to me that sometimes I hear these frightening stories of young children who pick on the blind, the mentally challenged, the handicapped. They'll turn them over in their wheelchair. They'll make fun of them. Boy, how did we get this to this point? How did we get to where we mock the less fortunate? How did it happen? We've gone back to the abominations. You know, we think about this great culture in our land. And by the way, I love America. Don't mistake me. But you know, when people came over here and settled this country, everybody talked about the Indians. Well, the Indians believed in a god, yes. But you know what? They got all those totem poles running around there. You know what a totem pole is? It's an abomination. Let's not make light of it. It's an abomination. I don't need any totem poles. I don't need any totem poles in my house. What I do need is I need God's presence in my house. It doesn't come with a totem pole. I know lots of people that have totem poles. I don't know lots of people. I guess I've seen a few totem poles in people's houses, and guess what? It didn't make them holy. It just didn't. I was thinking earlier, maybe this would be how we recognize a holy person. We just walk around with our Bibles all the time. They just walk around our Bibles and wear a suit. Well, how you doing, brother? How you doing, sister? That's holy talk, isn't it? Does that make me holy? Boy, it happens all the time, doesn't it? As if carrying a Bible, or how about this, we wear a cross around our neck or a cross somewhere else, and we see that cross. I see it on movie stars all the time when they're interviewed on TV. They seem to all be wearing crosses. And I look at that and I think, well, there's somebody who follows Christ. Oh, this is their 17th marriage. Well, what's going on there? And they're sleeping with somebody. In other words, the cross is just worthless. It's worthless. They're the wrong representation of what they're supposed to be. So you get sidetracked by paraphernalia. And that does not make you holy whatsoever. I'll continue reading on just a little bit farther now. I don't want you to go about in verse 16 as a talebearer. Do you see down here, we're now into bearing false witness, the principle that's taken from a great moral commandment. I don't want you to be a talebearer among your people. Neither shall you stand against the blood of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You are not supposed to get into false testimony. Your word is supposed to be true. Verse 18, you shall not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. He says, I am the Lord. By the way, do you see overtures here toward the Matthew 5, 6, and 7 speech? Sermon on the Mount? That you're supposed to do what to your enemies? Love your enemies, and you are then to speak well of those that would persecute you. See, this, where does that New Testament teaching come from? Right out of the Holiness Code here in Leviticus chapters 17 through 26. We would see now in verse 19, you shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle gender with a different kind. Remember what we talking about cattle here? Because statutes, C-H-O-Q, applies to nature. Okay, so here we're talking about animals. So we have statutes that regulate animals, like we have statutes that regulate trees and the collection of the fruit and so forth. He says here, you shall not let your cattle gender with a different kind. You shall not sow your field with mingled seed. Neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon you. And this is all about principles that create the best that we can possibly have rather than diluting the quality and so forth. That's the way it was in God's theocracy. Now, we come down to verse 37 of chapter 19. Therefore, you shall observe all my statutes and all my judgments, and you shall do them. He says, I am the Lord. I want you to turn to chapter 21 quickly and back up just to chapter 20, just a few verses here. Verse 22 of chapter 20. You shall therefore keep all of my statutes and all of my judgments, and you shall do them, that the land where I bring you to dwell therein does not spew you out. You know, God can cause a people to be spewed out. Do you know that? He can. And it's interesting that God, apparently, by the historical record, only tolerates abomination for so long. And it gets so heinous, so rotten, so stinking, so filthy, so horrible, he has to put them out of the land. And what disturbs me about that, it looks like our whole planet is headed that way. And maybe that's why Jesus Christ is coming back soon. The one who offered his blood so that you and I can have complete forgiveness of sin. Chapter 21 now. Notice in verse 6. They shall be holy unto their God and not profane the name of their God, for the offerings of the Lord made by fire and the bread of their God they do offer. Therefore, they shall be holy. Let me just try to boil this all down to the essential point. The New Testament teaches two great laws. You know where those two great laws come from? The Holiness Code. Love toward God, love toward your neighbor. That's where they come from. And that's what Jesus came and taught, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. The Apostle Paul taught it. A lot of people believe, if you study it, that the book of James is a text that was derived from the Holiness Code. That James, knowing what the Holiness Code, wrote that book, talking about how we're supposed to live with one another. Love toward God and love in our community. Here's what it's all about. You want to be holy? Here's how you be holy. You do that which is right. In whose sight? In God's sight. By doing that which is right in God's sight, you leave your imprint on this community. It may not be very dramatic, but nonetheless, it's an imprint. I think about my little granddaughter. She came over to the house last evening, and Betsy and I were chatting with her. And she's, 10 years old, I think, sweetie, 10 years old, and she's just learning her way. And her mom and dad are trying their very best to teach them the best that they know to do. That's a risk. You never know what's going on, because you turn the kids loose from you at home and they go where? They go to school where, basically speaking, kids are running the halls doing what they want to do. So a little girl, she was in the, this is the way the story came to me. And I thought about how this works. She was in the little girl's lavatory, I guess, and one of the little girls, I didn't know, the way this was told to me is that a little bully girl, are there bully girls? Mm-hmm. Are there little girls that are bullies? Really? I don't know, have you men ever met a bully girl? But anyway, the story was is that this little, she's in the laboratory, and this little sort of a bully girl comes up to her, to McKaylee, and says, "Hey, I want you to help me. We're going to go out here, and we're going to make fun of, and we're going to say bad things about this other girl." Do girls do stuff like that? So McKaylee said, "Uh-uh." Now, just work this through just a little bit. I know it's just a 10-year-old kid, but that 10-year-old kid is going to become 11, 12, 13, 16, 20, 30, and so forth, right? So what's going on now in infancy is going to play a big part in their adulthood, correct? So I like these types of things because she says, "No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it." Now, why do you think she's not going to do it? Because, number one, she's been taught not to do it. Who taught her? Home taught her. What's missing today in our society? Home is missing today. Well, people are under roofs, but they're single, divorced, got multiple partners, homosexuals are raising kids, lesbians are raising kids, we got chaos. Okay? You, in this room, if you want to find out what's going on in society 25 years from now, you go into Betsy's classroom and see what you think. Because of the ordinances that are now perverted. Okay? And there will be a punishment for it. And to some degrees, we're already suffering that. No, McKaylee, to her credit, she made an imprint. And because some adult recognized it, she's probably going to get a special award for being a standout child. So, that's due to her grandfather. No, it isn't. It has nothing to do with me. Okay, I want you to turn over to 1 Peter, and we'll close here with these texts. 1 Peter chapter 1, I think you are convinced that the Bible adjures us, admonishes us to be holy. You know, we hear that text, and again, I want to come back and revisit this, especially those who might be viewing today on the webcast, or those of us who are going to leave here today, and just recognize these two great principles that are in the text. Of Leviticus, the holiness code. That is, you are really supposed to worship the one true God. You're not supposed to have any other idols before him, nothing. And then you're also supposed to show love towards your neighbor, towards your friend in your community. And by doing that, you act like God. Because let's put it this way. Could anyone with sin enter into God's presence? No. God was holy. He was detached from, apart from, stayed away from, was not part of sin, iniquity, transgression, corruption, abomination. No way! Stop it! It's not happening. Not with me. I am holy. You be holy. Not with you either. You are my people. You want my promises. Here they are. You want to read something sobering? Read Leviticus chapter 26 and talk about how God says, "I will increase sevenfold the punishment upon you. And if that doesn't work, I will increase it sevenfold again. I will vomit you out of the land. Be you holy. I am holy," he said. Let's read 1 Peter chapter 1 and a few texts here. It says here in verse 13, "Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." Now, as verse 14 says, "As obedient children, don't fashion yourselves according to the former lusts in your ignorance." You know, we all did a lot of those things in ignorance, didn't we? Sure we did. And he said, don't go back to those things you did in ignorance. "But as he which has called you is holy," so what are you supposed to be? You're supposed to be holy. "As he that has called you is detached from sin and corruption and violence and not caring about those that are helpless and maimed and handicapped." No, we're supposed to care for people like that and be concerned about them. Be you holy, he says. Be separate. Don't be like society. Don't be like this conventional way of thinking about things unless it's a reflection of the moral law. You know, let's be honest, there are a lot of people out there who do pretty good at some of these laws. But society overall is sliding down into a dark pool, a cesspool of disobedience. And I'm just telling you, it stinks. It's rotten. And it's filthy. The reason why I know that is look at the way it affects people. It ruins them. takes them away from God. I did read the text in here. There's several there in Leviticus. You can go back and look at it, where God says, don't you go to wizards? Don't you go to these people that say they can talk to the dead? Don't get all caught up in all this. And may I bring it up today? All this gothic stuff? What's that all about? The dead, black, perverseness, hostility, anger. What's that all about? Be you holy. Don't go there. We've been there. We're out of it. Don't go back, he says. Be separate. Be apart. Be different. No one can come to me if they have the presence of sin about them. They have to be washed and cleansed. Then I will dwell with them. That comes to an interesting point. Let's notice verse 16. Then, because it is written, be you holy, for I am holy. Now, I ask this question. What does holiness look like? Remember we talked about it at the very beginning? I have a radical idea for you. What does holiness look like? It looks like Steve. Looks like Dave. Oh no, let me think that one over again. Looks like Bob. Looks like Lisa. Holiness looks like Jessica. Even Bob Roper. Why do I say that? Because what dwells in you? The Spirit of God dwells in you. And the Spirit of God dwells in you. You know what's inside of you? That which is holy, unadulterated, unblemished, pure, sanctified. Somewhat beyond our grasp, isn't it? Maybe that's where we struggle, because we don't have an image of anybody like a father. We know what a father is, so we call him Father. We know what a father looks like. The best we've got is Jesus Christ in the New Testament. And look at what he did. And he was quite unlike the society in which he lived. And he is holy. So as we close here today in our services, where we're all dressed in our best and talk our best and do our best, I want to challenge you as you go out of this room today to think about being holy. Being like God. He's in you. He dwells in you. You have holiness abiding in you. So be as he said. Be you holy, saith the Lord your God, because I am holy. You do that, you'll make an imprint not only in your family, but on your community. That will usher in a new community of believers. So, as I look out at all of you, I want to thank you for being holy, worshiping God. You are the hope of this society, in this world, because you know God's moral laws, his judgments, his statutes, and you know what he expects of you. So let's go our way and be you holy, even as the Lord our God is holy.